The phones rang in this Gaza neighborhood Saturday morning, with warnings from Israeli intelligence to evacuate. In what people say felt like only moments, 6 apartment buildings were destroyed or damaged.
My 4-year-old son wakes up when he hears any sound, thinking it's an airstrike, and he clings to me. It makes me frustrated because my children are scared. My life has become miserable, and there is nothing left in our hands.
Umalik Shamalik says she can't even dig out a shirt from the rubble for her 2 young sons. The family is homeless, but will have to find money to pay the mortgage on the apartment and find a new place to live.
Since 2008, there have been 5 wars or attacks in the Gaza Strip. The longest was in 2014 and lasted 51 days. After the war, dozens of countries met and planned to raise $5 billion to rebuild Gaza. But not even half that money was actually donated. The biggest donors? Qatar gave more than $1 billion in aid. Saudi Arabia, $500 million. The United States, the United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait each gave $200 million.
These photos show the before and after of some reconstruction projects. After last year's Israeli airstrikes, Qatar and Egypt committed $1 billion total to help Gaza rebuild again, but with no time frame. Gaza's Ministry of Public Works and Housing says it needs millions of dollars now to provide housing for 2,200 families.
We feel that Israel is putting some obstacles in the way of the donors. They want the reconstruction process to be slow.
Over the years, even once reliable Arab allies have stopped offering funding. And with many humanitarian crises globally, donor fatigue has set in.
Israel, as the occupying power, they have every responsibility to take care of the situation there. But in the long-term run, you know, for China and also for the huge majority of the international community, what concerns us is that we cannot simply look at the specific situation in a piecemeal way.
Some in the international community may continue to spend billions of dollars rebuilding Gaza after each war or attack. But Palestinians wonder when the world will see that it's more prudent to invest in peace. Natasha Ghanem, Al Jazeera, Gaza.
Under international humanitarian law, the State of Israel is considered an occupying power in Palestine. As such, it's required to meet certain obligations. One of them is avoiding collective punishment. That means an entire group cannot be sanctioned as retaliation for the acts of some of its members. The confiscation or destruction of private property is also not allowed. There is, however, an exception if the occupying military force decides it's absolutely necessary. And people accused of crimes by the occupation have a right to a fair trial. Let's get some further analysis now with Jonathan Kutab, who is an international human rights lawyer and joins us via Zoom from Washington, D.C. Jonathan, thanks so much for being on this NewsHour. Firstly, is Israel respecting its obligations under international law as an occupying power?
Not at all. Israel has tried to carve out a special, unique status for Gaza by calling it enemy territory. In a way, by taking the settlers out from Gaza and redeploying around Gaza, it pretends that international law should not apply, that whatever problems occur in Gaza are Gazan problems. At the same time, it keeps to itself the right to control all entry points and exit points, the air above, the sea next to it, and the earth below it. It is an occupying power, but it does not wish to carry out its obligations as an occupying power at all.
Does Israel have the right to conduct these raids, specifically in civilian areas, to prevent what it says is Palestinians preparing to attack?
Well, Israel, like every other occupying army, has the right to defend its soldiers and to defend itself. The problem is that Israel has morphed this right of defense of its forces into a right to do absolutely anything and everything it wants. Under the laws of war and under the laws of occupation, there are certain regulations. For example, you cannot use collective punishment. You cannot simply destroy things because you do not like for them to be there. It has to be a very specific need related directly to the security of its forces. And right now, they don't have any forces inside the territory. They are surrounding it, and they are controlling it from the air and from the ground and from the sea. So I don't understand exactly the claim of self-defense or protection.
So then what process is there to investigate allegations of these breaches of international humanitarian law?
There isn't. Well, actually, there is. The Security Council has the right to intervene and to even impose sanctions on Israel. But the United States, of course, uses the veto power to prevent the Security Council from carrying out its functions. Also, whenever they try to investigate, Israel refuses to allow access to international bodies to enter and investigate. And when Palestinians try to go to the International Criminal Court, again, the United States interferes and prevents the ICC from carrying out its functions to the point of threatening the judges and the prosecutors if they would try to carry out their duties under international law.
Unfortunately, we have to move on, but we really do appreciate your insights and breaking it all down for us in such a concise way. Jonathan Kotab, an international human rights lawyer, thank you for being on this NewsHour.
Thank you.
Palestinian authorities are inaugurating a street named after Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was killed by Israeli forces. Shireen was shot while on assignment in Jenin in the occupied West Bank in May. Members of the international community have condemned her killing and continue to call for accountability. Shireen was with Al Jazeera for 25 years and was known as the voice of Palestine. Our correspondent Nida Ibrahim is in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank and filed this report.
The legacy of Shireen Abu Akleh is now being engraved in the collective memory of Palestinians. This street, the Shireen Abu Akleh Street, is where she used to walk to work every day. It's very close to Al Jazeera's offices. This is a street she used to work to walk in and work for more than 25 years. It's also very close to Al Manara Square, a place that had witnessed historical events for Palestinians. This is a testament to how much she's loved. We're joined here now by Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, a senior politician. What does it mean for Palestinians to have a street named after Shireen Abu Akleh?
No matter how many honors are bestowed on the memory of Shireen Abu Akleh, she is no longer alive, she's no longer with us, and she was assassinated and deliberately killed by an Israeli sniper. So Shireen deserves all this recognition. But the most important recognition is the fact that she is held dear in the hearts of every Palestinian.
I think it's very important, the place of the monument actually here, because it's the place where most university students pass by here every day to see. And, you know, most of them are the future generation. They're going to become journalists, and she's a very significant example for them, excellent example for them.
Not only here in Ramallah, but elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, we see pictures of Shireen, murals being drawn by Palestinian artists. Everyone here wants to send a clear message that it's been 90 days since Shireen was killed and her killer hasn't been held accountable.